I think he's making these moves too late and too timidly, as John said. I mean, realistically, he should have been making these moves a year or two ago. And he seems reactive right now to Crist and, to John Morgan behind him. And really what I see is, Crist can embody some sort of, to borrow a phrase from the mayor, next level thinking, whereas, Scott is running on a record that seems really kind of static.
Kyle Sieg, meanwhile, as the governor is touting Florida's job growth, unemployment has dropped in Florida. That's something he can point to in the reelect. At the same time, though, the state is continuing to have problems with a website for unemployment benefits. People who are out of work can't get their unemployment.
Right. I actually have a family member who has been sending me messages, I think pretty much every month, that something new is wrong with the unemployment website. And then, she tries to call the number that they say to call, and then that number doesn't work, or they say 1 second, please, and all of a sudden there's a dial tone. So there have been issues, but then a lot of people point to the nationwide healthcare website and problems with that. We actually had an employment expert on today, and what I find interesting about this is, she was looking for what we call the hot jobs of 2014, and those were technology-related jobs primarily. The other interesting thing I think she said was that employers are now more willing to train people on the job rather than, expect a certain level of experience when coming in, because they're not able to find people with that level of experience that they would like to see.
And go ahead, John.
Well, there's a bigger story here, and that is that for the first time in 5, 6 years, Florida has $30 million to throw into job training. In fact, Florida's going to have a $1 billion surplus, the state of Florida, this year in its budget. And when the legislature convenes in 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to see a real fistfight over how to spend that budget, how to spend that $1 billion in overrun.
AG Gankarski, the state is flush after years of struggle.
Right. And, as we've discussed many times in the show, there are plenty of needs for it, infrastructural needs, needs for job training, needs with the education system. So although there is a budget surplus, my instinct is that it's going to be apportioned really quickly.
And if you're just joining the show, the number to call into the Friday Media Roundtable here on First Coast Connect as we discuss the top stories of the week, 549-2937. Well, State Attorney Angela Corey is once again in the news on a number of fronts this week. Now, Corey raised eyebrows after giving a speech at the Tiger Bay Club in Jacksonville, where she told the audience she doesn't read newspapers and also she doesn't think the public should know the details of court cases until they go to the jury. That made news across the country. Meanwhile, George Zimmerman, of course, who she prosecuted in the murder of Trayvon Martin, is making waves. He posted a painting of Angela Corey on Twitter. It's inspired by or a print of a photograph taken by a former Times Union photographer. The painting, titled Angie, recreates photographer Rick Wilson's image of Ms. Corey. And so we're waiting to see what comes out of that story. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, Larry Hannon, you broke this story, Angela Corey speaking at the Tiger Bay Club. Now, she's certainly not the first Republican politician to say, hey, I don't read newspapers. Mm-hmm. I think the media is biased against me. That plays well with a percentage of the voters. At the same time, it did raise eyebrows among others who care about issues such as the First Amendment and public records laws.
It came up actually when the property appraiser Jim Overton asked her if she'd read a New York Times story on this case in St. Augustine, and she was adamant that she doesn't read the New York Times, she doesn't read the Times Union, she doesn't read any other paper, and when she needs to know something in the paper, her staff tells her about it. It is interesting that more and more politicians, as well as some athletes and other media figures, seem to say this, that they don't read newspapers at all. I find it mystifying personally, and also the fact that she doesn't think that the public or the media should know anything about cases before they go to a jury is it is completely against public records law. But she specifically said to the audience she's fighting every day to keep the media from knowing these things.
And how did that go over with the audience?
I'd say it was half and half. I'd say about half of the people in the room were very supportive of her. The other half seemed puzzled would be the best. It was a very sedate audience, as the Tiger Bay Club tends to be.
Sure, so. But you know, that's more in line, A.G. Jomber, with the British system, closed courtroom proceedings. It's not in keeping with our American tradition.
Well, I want to know who in the state attorney's office, who has the job of reading the paper so that and telling Angela what's in it, because I know for a fact Angela is quite aware of what's in the newspaper.
So you think that was just a bit of rhetoric for that audience?
Well, you know, hey, look, you've really made it in this country when you've got somebody, you can pay somebody to read the newspaper for you and then tell you what's in it. That's pretty cool.
AG.
Yeah, I mean, that was something the Nixon administration used to do. They actually used to have Pat Buchanan read the papers for Nixon and digest things. So,
and you know, see how well that worked.
Right. It worked out great. So it's not an unheard of process. And I think Corey looks at it like, you know, she's just going to play her position to the hilt and basically say, you know, there should be as little information disseminated as possible. And, you know, every turn she basically discredits the media. And it seems to work for her because she really has no allies in the press corps anyway. So, you know, why not actually play the yes against them logic and see where it leads her?
We'll go to your calls on this story and the other top stories of the week in just a moment at 549-2937. Kyle Sieg. That's not the only Angela Corey story that's generating nationwide headlines. George Zimmerman has posted this painting on Twitter. It's a critical painting of Angela Corey. And now we're not sure yet whether there's going to be a lawsuit coming out of this.
Right. Attorney John Phillips actually, I guess, has been picked to look into it. He was very clear that a lawsuit hasn't yet been filed and that they're just, you know, beginning the first portions of an investigation into the art. What was interesting was Zimmerman's so-called art teacher, who we heard from this morning, say that basically everyone aside from George Zimmerman has made a lot of money off of this case, which he was clear to say is unfortunate on all sides. So why shouldn't Zimmerman? The guy also said that what other job could George Zimmerman have? You know, he's well known, so he couldn't work at any place where the public is, and basically he has no other marketable skills that he can use now because of the case. So where else is he going to get his money?
The painting,
security job?
The painting show? The painting shows her with her hand in the air when she was making a gesture during a press conference during the Zimmerman proceedings, and there's a caption where it's satirical, saying, "I have this much respect for the American judicial system." Obviously, Zimmerman still harbors some ill will toward her. A.G. Gankarski, you wrote a column about this.
Yes, I did, on the Folio Weekly page. Check it on the internet. Basically, my theory is that George Zimmerman is trolling everybody. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's got this Twitter feed that he's on 24/7. He'll respond to anybody out there. He arranges these bizarre publicity stunts, rescuing a family in an overturned SUV, you know, going, you know, basically posting stuff about rescuing animals, all of these things. So he's crafting a public image. And his painting is right along lines with this. It's actually a very sophisticated work of art. Using the color scheme of the Chinese flag, using the techniques made popular by Basquiat and local artist Lee Harvey. I mean, it's really a brilliant piece of work. And
you think he produced this? It's an original piece? You think he did this by himself?
No, I actually, my theory is I commissioned it in sort of the Warhol way. What Warhol would do is actually have an idea and farm it out to people. And why not? I mean, George Zimmerman's imprimatur is worth a certain amount of money to a certain subset of the culture. So he's not really cashing in on the art so much or the appropriation of the Times Union image so much as, you know, he's cashing in on being George Zimmerman putting out a painting about Angela Corey, and I think it's brilliant.
Larry.
Yeah, I mean, no one else would be getting this type of attention if they paint a picture of Angela Corey. It's, you know, George, you know, many people have Google News alerts for George Zimmerman. Anything he does gets hits and gets attention. And he's lashing out at someone he thinks has done him wrong and probably making money doing it. So, you know, it's sort of like Dennis Rodman going to North Korea, I guess. It's just, you know, now he kind of needs to stay in the public eye to make money.
Well, and it's also a trend in the media. You hear with polarizing figures like Zimmerman. I know we get a lot of calls. You guys probably do too. Everyone gets emails. Why are you still talking about Zimmerman? Why are you still talking about Zimmerman? It's the same way with other issues too. But in many cases, those same people who are asking are also more than willing to listen to stories or read stories or have those alerts set for George Zimmerman. So, I mean, if the readers are there, if the viewers are there, then it's going to be provided.
Do you think Angela reads George Zimmerman's Twitter feed? Or is somebody paid over the state attorney's office to keep track of that, too?
She does have a Twitter account, so I'd be interesting to see if she follows Zimmerman. I'd be surprised if she does.
Meanwhile, we want your calls on the biggest stories of the week, 549-2937. Let's go to Don down in Bay Meadows. Hello, Don. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to comment about the governor's proposal to fund training programs here in Duval County and to comment about the fact that his proposal is slanted toward third-party involvement. That would mean either the state agency or a private company doing training and then leaving those people to find jobs. We have that today with the educational programs at the so-called career colleges, where students are going to these career colleges, getting loaded up with $30,000 worth of debt. They come out, they cannot get jobs. One of the reasons is their education is quite inadequate. And if you go through all of the economic, the human resource, the management literature, personnel management literature, you'll find that the most successful on-job training programs, going all the way back to the Kennedy administration and even before, have always been with the employer doing on-the-job training, and where the employer is subsidized by the government so that the brunt of the cost makes it more reasonable for them to hire more people for their on-job training program customized. And this has worked out very well years ago for banks, especially banks when years ago it was Chase Manhattan, which are all merged now. But in many other industries also, in printing especially, the employer's own on-job training program, and with that a commitment to keep that person employed at least for 2 years later, mm-hmm. after that person is fully trained.
Okay.
I think that this is the proper and best way to go because it's the only proven successful story for on-job training. If you search all the literature, state literature, the federal literature, all of the journals, you'll find that the results have always been reported according to these facts.
All right, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Your thoughts, John Burr.
Well, it makes perfect sense. Nobody but the employer knows better what kind of training somebody needs to hold a job in the market. So that makes perfect sense. And I think $30 million, great idea. But, you know, it really should be $300 million. There's a great need out there, both in the individuals who can't find jobs, but also with the industries that need qualified workers.
Yeah. That's what's so frustrating. Well, there are jobs out there, but they can't find people that match the skills.
Yeah, one thing worth mentioning about Scott is he's not popular. He's not going to become popular. He struggles to get over 40% approval rating. But he does have an argument for re-election, which is, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And for a lot of people, the answer is yes. The economy is much better now than in 2008. And it's an interesting issue because people don't like Scott. But
at the same time, Charlie Crist's numbers have been driven down as the state Republican Party has been blasting out negative emails, ads, and that will only ramp up. So you've got, should Crist win the nomination, Nan Rich is also running. Mm-hmm. You've got two candidates with a lot of baggage and not the highest ratings. Kyle Sieg.
The one thing I was going to say about the jobs is there's also another portion, which it's the people getting that education. I mean, you know, I went to what's considered one of the best journalism schools in the country, but the reality is you still need some on
not
the job.
Not as good as mine.
Not as good as yours. Fine, sure, whatever. You're the host.
I'm kidding,
That's another debate. No, but I mean, the reality is you need some form of on-the-job training regardless. The question is how much. The other question is, you know, how much effort is the student putting forth in those colleges the student is going to? I mean, I did spend time at FSCJ back when it was FCCJ. Mm. And the point is that there were, you know, it got a lot of flack for not being the greatest school and all that. I had wonderful teachers, and it was the experience that you make it. The problem is there were a lot of students there who were lazy and not willing to make it a good experience. Yeah.
And it's 549-2937. Let's get Keith in Mandarin on the line. Hi, Keith. Good morning.
Got a lot of flack for not being the
All right, Keith, we need you to turn down your radio if you can't hear us and call us back. I think he is trying to call back. AG, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, as far as career colleges go, I mean, the real fact is those places exist to get 10 money, which is basically money for military veterans, and it's guaranteed money, and that's their cash cow. Also, they will take anybody. I've taught at a couple career colleges. They'll take people who can barely read, barely sign their name. You're reading at a fifth grade level, and you're training for IT jobs. It's not going to happen. So if you're going to use career colleges as any sort of meaningful training, you have to actually look at the standards behind them. And the Obama administration's made some noise about it, but not much has happened because there's a very powerful lobby behind them in Washington.
And you're not going to get someone, a company's not going to hire someone with no skills. I mean, you may need to get a refresher course in graphic design if you're hired to be a graphic designer. No one's going to say, oh, you know nothing about graphic design, come on in and we'll train you. You need to have those basic skills, yeah. And that's what we're lacking.
Let's go to Bill in South Point this morning. Hello, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. On this jobs education thing, the German model is something we just go over, look at, adopt it if we like it, and move on. They've already done an awful lot of work for the last 25 or 30 years. Just the model by itself cannot be included. You must look at other things like they have national health care, which helps make that kind of thing go better. Also, they have much more cooperation between government and economy to make sure the country moves forward in the areas that it wants to. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Let's get Billy in the queue. We have another Bill. It's Billy in Jacksonville. If we could get him into the queue, please, and we'll put him on the air. Hi, Billy. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm calling you from, right now I'm working on Southside. I wanted to make a comment on two of the topics. The first one, the gentleman talking about the school, he hit it right on the head. But the problem that we have is that no companies, they're not paying enough, and they're not reaching out to the community enough to find employees that are well-trained and to find employees that are willing to be trained. Companies got to be aggressive, and that should be worked with the state. The state and the local companies should get together and do that.
Yeah,
that's my first comment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second comment is on IRS state attorney. She's absolutely crazy. That's what I got to say. I'm a liberal Republican and a conservative Democrat. But that lady, I've seen her prosecute people for absolutely nothing. And then I turn around and allow people that have committed serious crimes to get off. So I don't know what her office is. And I think that we need a new state attorney.
Billy, thanks. Certainly, State Attorney Corey is a polarizing figure. She has detractors. She also has high-profile supporters.
She does.
Let's talk about the next election.
Well, it's not till 2016, so we've got a ways to go. I have talked to a few people about who they expect to run against her. There's no names yet, but they made the point that it's almost certainly going to have to be a Republican to beat her because right now, a Democrat cannot win in Nassau County and Clay County, which is part of that district. And to win, you've got to be at least competitive in those places. She did not, when I tell people it's 3 years to go, they're surprised because they forget that she ran unopposed in 2012, so was never on the ballot. She has the Zimmerman case really hurt her, not just among liberals who never liked her, but a lot of conservatives were unhappy about that. So she now has a lot of conservative detractors as well as liberal detractors. But, much like with Alvin Brown, you've got to find a candidate. And right now we don't have anyone running against them. People are trying to find someone. But, and until we know who's going to run against her, she's likely to be the favorite for a third term.
And it's not a term-limited position either.
Correct.
Well, we need to move on and discuss other news of the week. This is another big story, lots of discussion about it. Jacksonville City Council President Bill Gullerford this week slammed Mayor Brown's proposal. Mayor Brown says, let's take $40 million a year from JEA to help solve the city's pension problems. Gullerford called the idea a non-starter. He even labeled it voodoo, says it'll harm JEA's bond rating. The mayor, for his part, is defending the idea, and when he met before the city's pension reform task force this week, he says, in addition to securing money from our city-owned utility, he'd like to see police and fire employees increase their pension contributions from 7% to 10%. among other changes, to close this multi-billion dollar pension liability gap that is looming over the city of Jacksonville. Moody's may even downgrade Jacksonville's bond rating eventually. So here's our question to callers right now. What do you think of Mayor Brown's proposal to ask JEA to contribute a little more to solve the city's pension crisis? 549-2937. You know, John Burr, I can see this flying with some voters who every so often they read in the paper that JEA employees are getting these lavish bonuses. That's never politically popular. What do you think about this idea?
Well, I don't like it. I really think they do need to find some better way to augment the revenue for the pension system. But, you know, really the big solution here is the pension system is too generous. And they've got to find some way to reduce the benefits that are paid out. And I don't hear anybody talking about that. I mean, and that's the real heavy lifting that needs to be done here.
And the mayor is making suggestions that many others have embraced, saying the future employees have to contribute a little more. Cost mm-hmm. of living adjustment would be changed, mm-hmm. but the existing employees, the ones that are already drawing benefits, they have to honor those AG. They have to honor those obligations.
Right, and I think Rutherford was actually on point when he said that. You know, over a decade or more, the millage rate has dropped. And, you know, we basically, you could see the logic 5-7 years ago during the housing bubble where prices were just going up, so you didn't really feel the impact. Now that prices are stabilized to more historic levels, you know, we're feeling the impact on it. So, you know, what's really happening is that Mayor Brown is in an untenable position, coming up with solutions to failed long-range thinking during the previous administration.
He's in a tough spot, and he made a pledge not to raise taxes, and he's sticking to that. Now, let me ask you, though, Bill Shai, the bow-tie-clad chairman of the city's pension reform task force, he's saying that they're looking at a potential property tax increase.
I think long-term they have no choice, and I think what we're likely to see is the council approve a property tax increase over the objections of the mayor. We know they've done several other issues as well. And to a certain extent, on a cynical level, everyone wins this way. The city helps fix its pension issue. Brown can continue to say he never raised taxes going into his reelection. But, you know, we live in this weird city where we've got a Democratic mayor saying no new taxes under any circumstance and this majority Republican city council that seems set to raise the millage rate.
And what's driving that?
I don't know. I think it's just the realization that this pension issue has to be dealt with, and there are no good answers. And I also think that the city council and the mayor's office do not like each other. And, you know, I don't think, you know, you hear Gulliver, he seems genuinely angry that Mayor Brown is suggesting this. He feels it's irresponsible. So,
well, you know, it also points, and we've talked about this a lot on the program, to the very bad relationship between the mayor's office and city council. Now, if those guys were talking to each other, the mayor would have, you know, had coffee with Bill Gulliver and said, "Hey, Bill, what do you think about this idea?" Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, floating this trial balloon out there and then getting shot down, he would have avoided all the political embarrassment of being called, you know, of having his proposal called voodoo. Because they would have been able to work something out.
But this goes back to
To be fair, we don't know whether maybe there were closed door conversations. We don't know. Right. But Kyle Sieg,
I was just going to say that regardless, there's always a political issue. There's always the political perspective. And as much as people want to hear the pension reform debate, you know, be finished and complete, no one likes anything to go up. So whether or not it's property taxes, whether or not it's JEA, no one wants to see anything go up. So you have a lot of people who say, well, this needs to be fixed. Why isn't it being fixed? We have to fix it. But then when you talk about how to fix it, which involves, you know, a little less money for you, wait a minute. And that's a huge political problem, regardless.
And it's 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on how to solve the city's pension crisis. Candy in Arlington, thanks for holding, Candy. Good morning.
Good morning. The first thing I think this city needs is a new direction. And I don't think that we need to be taking from JEA to fix pensions. I don't think that we need to be forcing people to pay more toward their pension in this economy, we have still got people out there looking for jobs, and there are no jobs available. So why are we going to make our firemen and our police department pay 10% out of their checks toward their pension as opposed to the current 7%? 3% doesn't sound like much, but when you're living a particular lifestyle, that 3% could mean the difference between dropping from your current lifestyle or staying where you are. And there's got to be another solution, and it's too bad that the mayor's a Democrat and the city council is full of Republicans, because that's a big part of the problem. I agree that he should not raise taxes. I think that's wonderful. Keep the taxes where they are. But
right.
My big issue is with pulling money out of people's paychecks to go toward a pension fund that's been set at a certain level for years and years, and now suddenly you want to raise it and the economy sucks. That's not a good plan.
All right, Candy, that's Candy in Arlington letting us know what the voters think out there. Thank you, Candy.
Yeah, and we should mention, the mayor is still incredibly popular. I mean, every
high
poll
high approval
have,
rating, north of 70% in one poll. He will be very tough to beat.
Yeah, and as long as his poll numbers, he has a motivation to keep his poll numbers up because it keeps serious candidates from running against him. And, a politician's main goal is always to be reelected. And right now, as much as he's got his detractors, he looks poised to get reelected.